Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. I'm your host, Surreal Gerald Quinn, episode 766 on this Monday, March 15th, 2021. Great to be with you as we, I hope you can recover from, time from losing an hour of sleep. Yesterday I was definitely hurting. Yesterday, losing that hour Sunday morning, I kind of just wish they just leave it one way or the other. The time change, I'm not even gonna try to make sense of it. But I know when you lose that hour, when we go an hour ahead, an hour forward, it definitely takes a toll on that following day. I was hurting on all day throughout the course of the day on Sunday. But I am here with you on this Monday. It is great to have March Madness back. You remember last year, and this was around the time, a lot of anniversaries, to say the least, that have had transpired in the past couple of days. With March 11th, the anniversary of the NBA shutting down, March 13th, of course, the tragic shooting and murdering of Breonna Taylor, this is also Monday. This is the anniversary of virtual school for me. A virtual school. It was this time on last year. Now the actual date was the 16th, because the 15th was on a Sunday. But this is. We've been in 1 year of virtual school, for me. So a lot of different anniversaries over this course of March that were obviously COVID induced. Last year, one of the things that COVID took out and one of the things that was devastating for the sports was, of course, the loss of March Madness. That would not be the case this year. March Madness is back. The tournament will be back, and definitely excited to see it. I've stated this over the course of the season. I did not watch. I probably watched 60% of the college basketball that I normally watch. To be honest with you, did not go all. But I picked up with it over the last. I would say the last month was into the conference tournaments, and certainly know who's who. I know all the major players in this tournament, but it's been a difficult season of college basketball with COVID. Teams not playing the full schedules, certain teams not playing an unbalanced schedule, but we made it. To Indianapolis, where you have the college basketball season, the college basketball tournament will take place in the state of Indiana, and you have the number one seeds, Gonzaga, Michigan, Illinois, and Baylor. Gonzaga comes into the tournament undefeated, first time since 2015 that team has been undefeated. Of course, that was that loaded Kentucky team. Which I'm still trying to figure out 6 years later how in the world did they lose? So listen, I've seen better teams come into the tournament and get knocked off. 91 UNLV coming off a championship. And of course, we just mentioned the Kentucky team of 2015, Gonzaga trying to become the first team since 76, Indiana Hoosiers to go undefeated. And listen, this is a Gonzaga team that is a loaded team. They have three legitimate stars on their team, three legitimate first-round draft picks. Two of them are going to be lottery picks. But if I were to ask you the question, Gonzaga versus the field, you're still probably taking the field. Like, we know one bad shooting night. We know an injury. And now we know COVID. Can possibly play a factor in a team in knocking off a team. So Gonzaga, the clear favorite, but if it was Gonzaga versus the field, you're still taking the field. Though I think Gonzaga is going to win the national championship this year and finish undefeated. the Big Ten drought. Big Ten has not won a championship since 2000. Think about that. Now it's Michigan State. So 21 years since the Big Ten won won a championship. That drought could possibly end this year. The Big Ten, again, was loaded. You have legitimately three or four national championship teams that could win it, teams that could win it, Michigan, Ohio State, Illinois, Iowa to a lesser extent. They're not as good as those first couple teams, but Iowa's a very good team, certainly a Final Four contender. So, you know, this could be a year that the Big Ten ends this championship drought, as, again, Michigan, Illinois, and Ohio State are all teams that are Final Four national championship caliber teams. Last night, yesterday, of course, Illinois won the Big Ten tournament. And, it's really remarkable that the Big Ten is going that long without winning a national championship. 21 years is a long time. And, of course, no Kentucky, no Duke in the field. And I find it's very ironic that those two teams would be the teams that would be the two blue bloods that are missing. Those are two teams that have made a living off the one and done. Duke and Kentucky. So those are two teams that have made, I mean, if you look at the number of first round draft picks, it'll probably be Kentucky 1, Duke 2 over the last 10 years in terms of first round NBA draft picks. But, you know, and Kentucky was just god awful this year. Is this going to, now maybe this was COVID related, not a lot of practice time, chemistry issues within the teams. But those two teams were just not very good this year. I don't think they were not. They not only did they not make the tournament, I just think the amount of the talent, and despite the fact of how many Big Ten All Americans they had, the talent level was just not there, up to par as it has been in past years with those two particular teams. So it's going to be definitely a different looking tournament with no Kentucky and no Duke. No Kentucky, no Duke. Again, first time since 1976. Think about that. 1976. That's about 45 years ago. That you will be in the tournament without those two particular blue bloods. Again, I think this is going to be a great tournament. For most of the season, it had been Gonzaga and Baylor and everybody else. But over the last month, Michigan and Illinois has really gotten my attention as two other teams that could possibly win a national championship. My Final Four, I have Gonzaga, Florida State, Ohio State, and Oklahoma State, and I have Gonzaga beating Oklahoma State. I really like Oklahoma State a lot. Kay Cunningham, I think, is the best player in the country. Will be the number one. Will be the top pick in the NBA draft, top three pick, if not the number one pick. Oklahoma State has been a number of top ranked teams, played in a rugged Big 12 conference. Really like the way that they were playing down the stretch. And of course, Gonzaga is it's Gonzaga's time. Mark Few and that program has been knocking on the door for a long time in terms of getting to the Final Four and getting to win a national championship. They almost won a national championship a couple of years ago against North Carolina, lost a close game in 2017. Mark Few is probably, the best coach not to win a national championship. He's probably number one on that list. So I think it's Gonzaga's time to win a national championship and to go undefeated. Now, again, I've seen better teams lose in the tournament. Better teams that I've seen much better teams get knocked off in the tournament. So it is not a given whatsoever that Gonzaga is not automatic that Gonzaga is going to win this entire thing, but they are without question the prohibitive favorites. They have the most talent. They look like an NBA team when you watch them play. They might kind of remind me of that Florida team that won it back in 06 and 07. They look a lot like that Florida team. They, you know, it turns out, in terms of athletically, physically, they can make shots. And again, they have three legitimate first round picks. Now, so it should be an exciting tournament. Hopefully COVID can stay away for at least 3 weeks. It definitely had an impact on the conference tournaments, as Duke, Virginia, Kansas were all knocked out of their conference tournaments because of COVID. Hopefully it has no effect, or it has zero effect or impact on this NCAA tournament, which will be played in its entirety, of course, in Indianapolis, from start to finish. A little bit different this year in terms of the format, in terms of the start times. They're going, instead of going Thursday, Saturday, Friday, Sunday, they're going Friday, Sunday. They're going Friday, Sunday, Saturday, Monday. So they're starting a day later. So they're going Friday, Sunday, Saturday, Monday. So a little change of pace for the NCAA tournament. Again, I'm not going to go crazy about who didn't make it versus who did make it. Thought for the most part, from the stuff that you read, that it was not, there was no outright team. There was no team that should have got in that didn't get in. I know Belmont won 26 games, but again, those type, when you don't play anybody, then you know you're going to be affected with RPI and net and all these different systems, mechanisms they use to measure strength of schedule, things of that nature. So Belmont, that team certainly was hurt by that. But for the most part, there's really not a lot to complain about as far as the committee goes. Now, should Michigan State be in the first four playing a playing game? Probably not. I mean, Michigan State, they did beat Michigan, they did beat Ohio State, and they did beat they beat three top teams in the Big Ten, Michigan, Ohio State, and I think they knocked off Iowa too. No, they lost to Iowa. So they beat Michigan, Ohio State, and it's one team that I'm leaving out. Illinois. Yeah, beat Michigan, Ohio State, and Illinois. So they just on that alone, they should not be in the first four, but the NCAA clearly wanted a sexy first four matchup. So they got Michigan. So you go two teams that have been perennial powerhouses in terms of history, UCLA versus Michigan State. So that was intentional. If you don't think that's intentional, then you just don't know how the NCAA tournament and how the selection committee deals and how they operate. That without question was intentional. To have those two teams playing against each other at first four come Thursday. So should be a great tournament. Great to have it back after a year of absence, after a year with COVID taking it away in 2020. Again, I think it's Gonzaga's tournament to lose, but there are certain teams that definitely could take, you know, there are a couple of teams that definitely have been hot down the stretch that can make it difficult for Gonzaga to go undefeated. But ultimately, I think Gonzaga will be cutting down the nets come that first Monday in April. Of course, on Saturday, we found out that the legendary boxer, marvelous Marvin Hagler, passed away at the age of 66. Still, you hear reports of natural causes. I know Tommy Hearns came out and said some stuff about the vaccine, which I don't know where he got that information from. But the family has said nothing in regards to how it happened. Just asked that their privacy be respected. So that'll come out in the next couple of weeks or so. But in regards to Hagler, really one of the all-time greats. He fought in the golden era of boxing, that 80s. Well, they called him the Four Kings with Hearns, Hagler, Leonard Hagler, Hearns, and of course Roberto Duran. He beat two. He was 2-1 against those other three guys. Easily could have been 3-0. Still, you know, a lot of people still believe. There's still a number of people that believe that he won the Leonard fight. Leonard ended up winning a split decision. again, it was a very close fight. I watched the fight a number of times. I thought Hagler won the fight, but it was close enough to where it could have went either way. But listen, Hagler is one of the few fighters that walked away with all his facilities and with all his money. He walked away basically on top. You know, he lost that Leonard fight. You're talking about a guy that was 62 and 3 over the course of his career. He held the middleweight championship undisputed for 7 years, from 80 to 87, fought everybody that was in his way. Frankly, again, was one of the great, great middleweights of all time, maybe outside of Sugar Ray Robinson, maybe the best middleweight of all time outside of Sugar Ray Robinson, and a guy who, again, one of the rare guys to walk away on his own terms. You know, guys, a lot of these boxing stories do not end well with guys who just can't walk away from the sport. I think he, Hagler, along with Floyd Mayweather and Lennox Lewis are three of the few guys in the history of the sport to ever walk away and walk away without any health problems and walk away without us seeing them on a decline. Like Lennox Lewis, all three of those guys walked away basically on top of the sport. And that is a rarity in this sport. Even the great, and late and great Muhammad Ali, look at a guy like Roy Jones, guys that just hang on for just too long. And before you know it, they're either losing a lot of fights down in the stretch, in the latter parts of their careers, or they walk away with a litany of physical injuries and physical debilitations. So he walked away near or at the top, went over to Italy, made movies, and kind of disappeared, to be honest with you. He walked away. The Leonard fight was his last fight. He was upset about that decision and refused to take a rematch, even though it would have been, at the time, probably the biggest payday in the history of the sport up until that point, at that particular time. And he, went about his business, went over to Italy, made movies, made a ton of money, became an action star over there, and kept it moving. So, certainly rest in peace to Marvin Hagler. If you're looking at this picture, was one of the most brutal fights in the history of the sport. The Hagler-Hearns fight. It only went three rounds, lasted 8 minutes. Hagler, of course, won the fight. But that fight was, I would encourage anybody to go back and watch that fight. Again, it's a very short fight, but I've never seen that much action in that short amount of period in a fight, to be honest with you. And the first round of that fight was considered one of the greatest rounds in the history of boxing. And it really, an action-packed fight where you saw, like, blows being dropped. I mean, these were power punches that both guys were dropping in this fight. Hagler was never knocked down in his career. I saw this morning that the one time he did go down was because of it was a slip. It was not an official knockdown. So a guy that was a technical savant, a guy that prided himself on, his conditioning, and really was one of the toughest guys in the history of the sport. And really, again, for the amount of time that he was around, he picked and chose when he wanted to fight. He really did things on his own terms. Could have made more money, didn't fight as much as he could have, stayed in one division. He really did things his way. But again, to say he was an all-time great is an absolute understatement. Marvelous Marvin Hagler, dead at the age of 66, and certainly will not be forgotten in the boxing circles. Drew Brees retires after 20 years in the NFL, 15 of those years, of course, with the New Orleans Saints. He spent his first part of his career with the San Diego Chargers and has to be considered the greatest free agent signing of all time, along with him. I'll say he and also Reggie White when Reggie White signed with the Packers back in 93. Those are the two, to me, greatest free agent signings of all time, considering what they did with their respective teams and the impact that they had after they signed. Listen, Breeze was an all-time great. You see the numbers. He came along in a perfect era when offense really started to take hold in the NFL. Also had the benefit of playing half his games in the dome. So you can't mention his career without talking about that. One of the most accurate quarterbacks of all time in terms of especially with his completion percentage. But here's what I said about Drew Brees, though. No MVPs, four runner-ups, six losing seasons. And listen, I think Drew Brees probably is a top 10 quarterback, but he's not Tom Brady. He's not Peyton Manning. He's not Joe Montana. He's not John Elway. He is not on the level of those quarterbacks. And to be honest with you, I'd rather have Aaron Rodgers. I'd rather have Steve Young. I would take Dan Marino. There are certain guys I would take over Drew Brees. Even with that said, he's still somewhere in that 10 to 12, 10 to 11 range as an all-time great quarterback. Really wasted the last 3 years where New Orleans was a powerhouse team and where they were a legit championship team. And that probably will bother Drew Brees. Even with the one Super Bowl that he won in 2009 season, because he frankly should have had another one. And New Orleans had a powerhouse team the last 3 years. They have been from top to bottom, arguably the best team in football over the last 3 years in terms of the balance of their roster, and they don't have a Super Bowl appearance to show for it. So that is the one, if you want to throw some, there are some chinks in the Drew Brees armor. You can say no MVPs, six losing seasons, and no Super Bowl appearances in the last three seasons with a stacked and loaded New Orleans Saints team. Again, those guys like Manning, Peyton Manning, Rodgers, Young, those guys did not have multiple losing seasons. Those guys had, like, Manning had two losing seasons, Rodgers had two, Brady has had none. I think Elway had one. Elway only had one. So it's not like with Drew Brees you can plug him in and get an automatic 10-12 wins. Didn't quite work that way in New Orleans, but he was, with Drew Brees that he was going to put up gaudy numbers. And that once they got that defense, when they hit the jackpot in the draft and they were able to accumulate a number of talent, that team was going to be one of the best teams in the league. But I think Drew Brees' ultimate legacy will be him helping that city recover from Katrina. He's done a number of things off the field. I know he said some stupid things this past summer about Colin Kaepernick and that whole situation. He put his foot in his mouth and without question was a bit tone deaf when it came to that. But for the most part, Drew Brees was a pillar in the community in New Orleans. And again, the Saints were the fans were putting paper bags over their heads for a lot of those years with the New Orleans Saints. Drew Brees, Sean Payton got together. They were probably the best outside of Belichick and Brady. They were probably the best quarterback coaching duo in the league, to be honest with you. So Drew Brees decides to retire. We're not done. We'll talk more about the Saints as they look towards their next quarterback for 2021. A couple things on the NBA. Of course, you had the Joel Embiid injury on Friday. Not as serious as it looked initially. He was going to be out for a couple of weeks, but this could severely cripple his MVP hopes. So keep your eye on that. The Sixers have been playing. They've played great over the last couple of weeks, and even without Embiid in these past couple of games. So keep your eye on that. Kevin Durant continues to sit out with the hamstring. He could be done. He could be done for another 2 weeks. Nets starting to have to start to be concerned at this point, considering how long that he's been out. Pelicans just had their way with the Clippers last night. But the bigger story is it's clearly Zion's team. And they, you know, Stan Van Gundy along with the rest of the franchise need to just give him the keys to the car and run everything through him. They've kind of given him bits and pieces, allow him to initiate the offense somewhat from the top of the key a little bit. I would just basically almost not make him the point guard, but make him basically the point guard in the half court. I think he is clearly their best player. He has great chemistry with Lonzo Ball. Doesn't have quite the same chemistry with Brandon Ingram, which, question marks on Brandon Ingram's future with the team. But without question, it should be Zion's team. That should go without saying. Like, that team. That team, to me, is at its best when he has the ball in his hands. And again, New Orleans is a hard team to figure out. I mean, they destroy a good Clipper team and lose to Minnesota by 30. So that they have been very inconsistent this year. But the main thing is the thing that they should take from this season more than anything else is the fact that Zion has arrived, and Zion, of course, keep Zion healthy, and it is without question Zion's team. So every move they make, drafting wise, free agency wise, should be geared towards building around Zion Williamson. And of course, don't look now, Giannis is right back in the midst of the MVP race, especially with Embiid hurt. There's a void to be filled with Embiid injured right now. Giannis has had a big March, and for the season, he's averaging 29, 11, and 6 for the season. That's for the season. So his name has been mentioned. If we're going to have an honest conversation about the MVP race in the NBA. We were talking about the Saints earlier. Taysom Hill got a 4-year, $140 million extension, which three of the years were voidable, which all the years were voidable, which basically comes out to being 1 year, $12 million. So the Saints saved over close to $8 million in cap space with this move. They also are negotiating with Jameis Winston, so they're going to have both of them back and probably have them compete for Drew Brees' spot. For the Saints quarterback spot coming next season. So, in essence, Taysom Hill got 1 year, $12 million. But again, these NFL contracts, you got to be careful and just read the fine print. Nasir Jones wins his first Grammy for best rap album, King's Disease. And listen, I heard a lot of people saying that it was a career lifetime achievement award. That was not the case. King's Disease was the best hip hop album of 2020, without question in my mind. So it's just unfortunate that it's taken the Grammys 25 years to figure out what we as fans already have known. And that's the fact that Nas is one of the greatest MCs, if not the greatest MC of all time. That's why you can't really pay attention to these awards and look for these awards for validation for your favorite artist, because what Nas has done over the course of his career speaks for itself, and it goes volumes above any award, to be honest with you. And think back, he had been nominated 13 times And number one, kind of, you know, a little bit like Susan Lucci. Remember Erica Kane from All My Children? She got nominated all those times and finally won a daytime Emmy back in 98. But, you know, I haven't watched it. I didn't watch it last night. I saw the highlights online on the internet. But I've been, you know, the Grammys has been the Grammys for, you know, 95 to 100 years. So there's nothing to worry about. I wouldn't read too much into it. As a Nas, as somebody who roots for Nas, as somebody who thinks Nas is the GOAT, you know, is the GOAT as far as MCs goes. Diddy has some interesting comments on the Grammys, basically called out the Grammys for, you know, disrespecting Black culture, and basically said that, you know, we put our hearts and souls into all these albums and records. And, you know, the Grammys said, you know, Grammys called out the Grammys for disrespecting artists for years upon years. And, you know, he says, you know, it stops now. So I don't know what Diddy's going to do for it to stop now. But, you know, it came out, got a standing ovation. And here's the thing. And I was having this conversation on a previous podcast with Monique Malibet last week when we did a podcast on International Women's Day and a number of other topics. The Grammys is a part of an institution, and institutions don't serve individuals. They serve them. Institutions serve institutions. So if, you know, what has to be, you know, if Diddy's not happy about being acknowledged by the Grammys and being acknowledged from the Grammys, then you know what? Create an award show. Create something that gives artists their proper respect in terms of Black artists, their proper respect. The thing is, and this goes across the board. It goes in corporations, goes in sports, music. The only way to fix a system is to create your own system that serves, is to create a system or an institution that serves individuals. So it'd be the equivalent of NBA players going out there and getting their own league and starting their own league. You know, these systems, the government, these leagues were built to serve themselves. Institutions were built to serve institutions. Systems were designed to serve systems. They were not designed to serve individuals. And that goes across the board in any walk of life, corporations, sports, government, whatever. Aaron Jones gets a contract, 4 years, $48 million from the Packers. He was an outright free agent, $13 million signing bonus. If you compare this to the Ezekiel Elliott contract, right, this is how you do business if you're a professional football team. So the Cowboys gave Ezekiel Elliott last fall, 2019, 6 years, $90 million, $50 million in total guarantees, $28 million in guarantees, basically $20 million signing bonus. Aaron Jones, the last 2 years, has easily outperformed Ezekiel Elliott. It's not even close. He has more touchdowns, more receiving yards, has a better yards per carry, and only trails Ezekiel Elliott by like 148 yards. And that's only because Ezekiel Elliott gets more carries. Because in terms of yards per carry, it's not even close. Aaron Jones was 5.5 this year and 4.6 in 2019. He's easily been the more productive back out of the two. Yet, this is why the Cowboys haven't been to a Super Bowl since 1996, 95 season. You don't pay a running back $90 million or guarantee $50 million. The contract that you saw Aaron Jones get, this is probably the most that I would probably give a running back, to be honest with you. Considering the circumstances that you have a quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers, a franchise quarterback. Now, certain situations, Tennessee, Carolina, Carolina doesn't have, you know, doesn't have a franchise quarterback, and they are solely, almost solely dependent on Christian McCaffrey. So I understand his contract. Derrick Henry, by way, who did not get a contract as big as Ezekiel Elliott, still got a ton of money. He is the heart and soul of that offense. I understand his contract. But for the most part, this is the type of contract that you want to give an above average running back. Somewhere 4 years, $48 million, somewhere $12 million a year, $13 million signing bonus in 4 years. This is about the perfect number that you want to give this type of back. A guy that can play on every down, a guy that can catch out the backfield, and a guy that you don't have to, that you're not going to pound into the ground. That you're not going to run to the ground to where he can somewhat last at least three or four years at prime condition. So Green Bay does it the right way, and you see Dallas does it the other way, and you see why those two franchises have been, you see why Green Bay basically has been competing for NFC championships and Super Bowls year in and year out versus the Dallas Cowboys, who have been struggling to make the playoffs year in and year out. Oscar nominations. We saw Chadwick Boseman and Viola Davis get Best Actor nominations for their roles in Ma Rainey. Andrea Day got a Best Actress nomination coming off her Golden Globe win. But here's the Oscars. Here's what annoys you about the Oscars in terms of how their treatment of African Americans. So Keith Stanfield and Daniel Kaluuya from Judas and the Black Messiah both get nominated for Best Supporting Actor. Now, if you want to say Daniel Kaluuya was a supporting actor, played a supporting role, okay, I can make a case that he was a co-lead, but fine. You want to say he was a supporting actor? Cool. Lakeith Stanfield has got to be a Best Actor nominee. Lakeith Stanfield, it was Judas and the Black Messiah. Lakeith Stanfield was clearly the lead in that movie and should have been nominated for Best Actor. And again, I don't understand why we know why. But it really annoys me when they do things like this. We saw it they did this to Viola Davis a few years back with Fences, when she got a Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress nomination instead of a Best Actress nomination, for a role in Fences. She basically, in essence, was a co-star with Denzel Washington in that movie. And we saw it. It can be done where you can have two people receive Best Actor nominations who were in the same movie. We saw it this year with Viola Davis and Chadwick Boseman. But again, I don't have a major problem with Daniel Kaluuya getting Best Supporting Actor nomination. But there's no way that Lakeith Stanfield should not have been a Best Actor nomination. It is ridiculous, and something is the thing that just annoys you about the Oscars, and again, how they treat African Americans. So you have that with the Oscars. We'll see what happens. Of course, the Oscars is on, I believe, is April 25th, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's April 25th. So we'll see what happens in regards to that. That is going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast. Enjoy the rest of your evening, and certainly enjoy. We will see you later on this week with episode 5, season 4, episode 5 of Snowfall. I'm out.